Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now on with Monkey Tennis.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello once more, and thanks for listening to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. This is Adam of Monkey Tennis here. Just to remind you one last time that Stephen Mangan is going to be our very special guest on the London leg of our Mid-Evening Matters tour. He'll be joining us live on stage at King's Place on Sunday, the 9th of September, to talk all about his time as Dan Moody in I'm Alan Partridge, maybe even sharing some wild Partridge theories, giving us some insight into what happens on set, if he can remember. It was some time ago, and probably also touching on some of his other roles in episodes Green Wing and beyond. So pick up your tickets at monkeytennispod.com, and here is a little more chat from me and the Monkey Tennis guys about that very tour. Hello friends and listeners, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here, and everyone else from Monkey Tennis.
Yeah, we are also here, thanks for that.
We're recording this, the background noise is because we're here live at Comic-Con, about to do the episode that you'll be hearing shortly, all about Welcome to the Places of My Life. But before we get going, we also wanted to tell you all about the Mid-Evening Matters tour, which will be going on this September. Tom Stab, where does the tour begin?
Oh, I'll tell you, Adam. It starts on the 7th of September in Bristol, home of Adam Brooks, so I think we're expecting a big turnout for that.
A lot of fans of Adam turning up there, I'd expect.
Yep, so that's the 7th of September.
That's Friday.
Friday yep, at the Wardrobe Theatre. Nick, where are we heading to next?
Afterwards, we will go to...
He's struggling.
Manchester on Saturday the 8th at the... Is it the Lowry Theatre?
It is the Lowry Theatre. That is correct, yes.
So he's got all the key information.
Yeah, it's all there.
He's very sure.
Bring it home, Tom Dark.
Okay, don't worry, guys. I got this. And then our third and final stop on the Mid-Evening Matters Tour.
Did I say it was on the Saturday? That's Manchester on Saturday.
Yeah, we covered that. Okay, yeah, that's all fine. Any other questions?
No.
Okay, good. So, yeah, our third stop on the tour... I mean, we're calling it a tour, it's three things. We'll be London, London's famous London. We'll be at King's Place on Sunday the 9th of September.
Full details and tickets are available from monkeytennispod.com. We're going to be covering mid-evening matters. We're going to be covering mid-morning matters series two. It'll be even more fun if you manage to watch the episodes beforehand, but if not, just come on down for a celebration of all things Alan.
Oh yeah, that does include me. I've still only watched it once, and that was quite a few years ago, so I need to rewatch definitely.
Probably more than Nick has seen it, yeah. I wouldn't worry.
No, I'm a genuine expert in this series.
Okay, so this is the one thing you have watched out of everything we've recorded.
So join us for a well-researched and prepared night out Mid-Evening Matters tour. But right now, on to today's episode, which, as we said, is recorded live at Comic-Con in London, covering all things to do with Welcome to the Places of My Life. Here we go. Run, VT. North Norfolk
Digital.
Monkey Tennis?
Well, this is great banter.
Hot, 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 hot ham.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E?
Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest.
Monkey Tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey Tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes.
It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey Tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
So here we are at Comic-Con London. It's Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, and we have a very special episode to record all about Welcome to the Places of My Life. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Many people, when underwater, pretend to be in space.
Nick Holder. My watch is waterproof. And Tom Stab.
Flying AIDS.
So.
There it is.
Welcome to the Places of My Life. Tom Dark is going to start us off with some stats.
Yes, let's set the scene behind this Alan special. This first broadcast on Sky Atlantic on the 25th of June 2012. So if you want to know where that is in the Alan timeline, in the part traverse. So in 2011 you have Mid Morning Back to Series 1 and the I Partridge book. So this follows that. So in 2012 you had Places of My Life and Open Books. 2013 was the Alpha Mama movie. 2016 was Mid Morning Back to Series 2 and Scissored Isle.
So he's comfortably in place at North Norfolk Digital at this point, isn't he? Relatively content, relatively happy, it seems.
In life in general?
Overall.
But put it this way, he's landed a job at North Norfolk Digital that he's had for a couple of years by this point.
I think he should be grateful for
So to an extent, he has bounced back.
One thing I like briefly, just on the IMDb description of this programme, is they say, welcome to the Places of My Life. Alan Partridge attempts a celebrity travelogue around his beloved Norwich. Attempts! If you're at the point that you can't even successfully go around Norwich, then you've got problems, haven't you?
I've successfully been around Norwich.
You've also bounced back. Shall I give you the viewing figures context for this quickly as well?
Yes, please.
402,000 viewers for this.
That's quite high.
That's higher than Mid-Morning Matters. I seem to recall that was
you're correct.
100,000 mark.
Yeah. So Mid-Morning Matters averaged around 150k. Interestingly, Scissored Isle, a couple of years later, that was 530,000.
Ooh.
So
feels slightly higher budget this, although I would say not much higher than Mid-Morning Matters.
Although, as we'll get on to discuss, the Pear Tree budget, you know, in terms of it being real TV, is shoddy.
That's true. Well, let's talk about that, because this is obviously another Pear Tree factual production, like Scissored Isle, which we've covered in previous episodes.
It's for the same factual logo, doesn't it?
We have
Alan huffing and puffing up a hill.
Well, I love this, the fact that the opening shot, Alan's off camera, and you can hear him out of breath. He's off camera for 10 seconds. So, as you see on the screen behind us, you just see top of his head after 10 seconds.
I like that it continues a fine tradition of him working his nasal grunts and whistles into his broadcasting.
Yeah.
And also, the good thing about this being a Pear Tree factual production is it means that every editorial choice, every cut, every caption, we can take as being Alan's doing. So it tells you a lot more about him.
Yeah, everything that makes it a shit TV programme is a deliberate Pear Tree gag, basically.
He has a director's credit on this, so he can be held directly responsible for that.
Oh, he's got a lot more than that. I was going to come to this in a bit, but we might as well run through it now. He's credited as follows: produced by Alan Partridge, written by Alan Partridge, directed by Alan Partridge, based on an idea by Alan Partridge, and Pete Gavitas.
God, he's been busy. He opens by talking a bit about East Anglia, or actually describes it the plump peninsula, home of the Broads, although that does sound like a refuge for fallen prostitutes, he says. Albion's hindquarters were quite simply the whales of the East. I wondered if he said plump peninsula because he's referring to the roundness of the coastlines, or he's implying that East Anglians are overweight. So I did a little bit of research.
Okay, I was going to speculate, but you might as well just cut
to the facts. Let's go straight to the facts. According to a Telegraph study last September, he's right. Most of England's obesity hotspots are in or just outside East Anglia.
Really?
Yep.
We also know Alan likes alliteration, doesn't he?
He does refer to it as the rump of Britain, does he not?
Yes.
Show me, he has referred to it previously as the rump of Britain.
He's got a bomb obsession when
he's
comes to East Anglia,
basically. Yeah. He's got freebies.
Around this point, he makes the first mistake that is quite obviously a mistake when he says, I'd like to introduce it to you and it to you, which I quite liked.
He also says it's the home for the best part and best parts of his life.
Yeah.
Question, is there anywhere else Alan has lived? There was a short stint in London.
Yeah.
But apart from that, he hasn't really lived anywhere. anywhere else. It's very short stint in London, so you basically live there for 90% of the time.
Did you know, he says this programme is a co-production with the Norwich Council of Traders.
I didn't really understand what... I mean, obviously it's a joke, but I didn't really understand it.
No, I looked into...
Well, it's the point that it's kind of like they're funding it, trying to make it a travelogue about why you should come and visit Norfolk, basically. I looked into
whether Norwich Council of Traders existed. It doesn't, but the Norfolk County Council Trusted Traders does. I then looked into registering Alan as a trusted trader. discovered after a small amount of research that this hilarious prank would set me back £195 of VAT, and we aren't paid to be here, so that was the end of that.
Did anyone else note there is also a... basically a refuse collector in a high-vis jacket in the background in this opening shot as well.
Oh yeah, there he is. I haven't spotted that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've not noticed.
I mean, he's wearing high-vis. I don't know how you missed it.
That's a good point.
Alan introduces that the show is a very emotional journey to discover who, why and what I am.
So he's going on a partridge pilgrimage, a partridge, a pilgrim partridge...
Or a partridge.
I wasn't going to even attempt that. They're quite difficult.
Yeah. A partridge pilgrimage.
I've phonetically written them down, but I've still stumbled on the last turn.
We can see on the screen behind us that throughout this programme, he is accompanied by graphics that, quite frankly, are a horrendous mash of like streetmap.co.uk and pictures of his car, copyrighted by Pear Tree Infographics. Yeah. So another wing of the Partridge brand there.
I mean, that's kind of Windows 95 style, isn't it? It's not particularly good.
Nick, you've always been a fan of Alan's graphics. Are you a fan of this?
Massive fan of that. And the sound effects as well. Really good.
So we find out that first he's heading towards his place of work, North Norfolk Digital, North Norfolk's best music mix, and he stumbles very briefly, which I thought is a nice callback to the fact that he keeps saying North Norfolk's in mid-morning matches.
Yeah, I like the fact he nearly fumbles. It's so subtle, but yeah, if you listen to the audiobook, you know what's going on.
Did anyone take a second to unravel the bit where he's talking about he's got a 10-minute commute, presuming I don't need to stop for petrol or toilet? Now, this works on many levels. One, just saying toilet is funny in and of itself, obviously. Yeah. But also, when you really think about it, there's the implication there that he can't go for a 10-minute car journey without having to stop for a wee, which is incontinent.
Again, Alan is very often toilet-based.
Yeah. Not to mention that a 10-minute drive is probably a walkable distance, but Alan is never walking, is he?
No, definitely not. And he compares his 10-minute commute to those in London that have long delays and cattle the long delays and cattle truck conditions of London's transport network. So of course, his first point to come to is how it's better than being in London.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I can appreciate with his views on some of London's transport network and infrastructure, I can attest that sometimes it is shoddy and poor.
There's then a sort of elaborate build-up to an amazing payoff where he basically gets cut up while he's recording by someone else. He's convinced he's in the right, but he can't bring himself to say fuck, so he only says F off. And then it builds and builds. You only see his side of the argument.
Yeah, it's an off-camera argument, you can just see his reaction.
You can see where it's going as well. I feel like I knew what that joke was going to be. But
still funny.
But then, at the end, well, we haven't explained the punchline yet. He pays it off by saying, I mean, she really shouldn't be riding a bike at her age.
That's the thing. Not only is it a girl on a bike, but it's like a five-year-old girl or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that was a great gag.
I'm not saying it wasn't good. I'm just saying I saw it coming and I still enjoyed it.
So we're at North Norfolk Digital at this point, are we not?
We are.
Okay. It's described as being in Outer Norwich.
It's funny, so there are some weird kind of details put on the title cards at these points, aren't there, like the Outer Norwich thing. How much difference does that really make?
Exactly, and in fact, at the very beginning, when his name comes up on the screen for the first time, it's literally only up for the amount of time it takes for him to say it, and then it disappears immediately.
And he's constantly at pains to sort of justify it, so he's kind of saying, it might look a bit small, you're thinking, well, no, not really, but he feels like this need to defend it because it's regional radio and he's not on the BBC.
And when we're at the radio station, he talks about how they all muck in together, and then you hear him talking to a producer about he knows someone that's got a weather sponsorship idea, and he's told to go and tell Sally. saying, you don't all muck in together, everyone has very clearly delineated jobs and roles within the company.
He also says that the studios are larger than a good quality dentist and can house Tesco Express, which is, again, funny as a line in its own right, but it also, you can realise from that, that Alan judges the quality of a dentist by how big it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right then, doesn't it?
You mentioned he talks about them all mucking in together. That's one of the reasons he gives for North Norfolk Digital being better than their rivals, Orbital Digital. Did you know there is actually an Orbital Digital? I did a bit of research into this.
I didn't know.
It's a support services company based in Essex, run by a man called Ray Santilli, which led on from the Orbital Media Company, which specialises in licensing 50s rock and new age music. I went to their website, and it boasts that they had a PR guru called Keith Bishop working for them, and their website has a quote saying, "Keith can get anything in the press, or keep it out if need be." They go on to say, "Our customers are at the forefront of downloading, ringtones, newspaper cover mounts, and mail order."
So they're at the forefront of the mid-90s.
Yeah. Yeah. So I immediately rushed to the download section of their website. Remember, they're at the forefront of downloads.
Yeah.
That section is coming soon. And then there's the final bit on this. There's a marketing and product placement section of the website, which takes product placement so literally, it has a picture of a nude woman on a beach with an iPod Touch covering her vagina. That's Orbital Digital, ladies and gentlemen. That website is still available.
So that's your share that on the social.
That's your excuse for looking at our phone. Yeah. I was doing research.
Yeah, well, it gets worse than that. We're not even onto the dogging section of this episode yet. So, anything else to add on North Norfolk Digital?
A couple of quick bits that he says. Sting described his broadcasting style as conversational, whereas Ross Kemp described his broadcasting style as equidistant between chit-chat and analysis.
I have a quick question. How would you describe Alan's broadcasting style other than shit?
I will go kind of garbled incompetent.
Yeah, it's sort of like shoddy at best.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Garden Centre Tannoy announcement.
Adam wins. Owen also, he describes old unfortunates on buses as looking like a scruffy Christ, and then he looks very pleased with himself for that.
Yeah, he does. Are we off to Riverside Leisure Centre yet?
We are, but just quickly, before we get into the detail of that, throughout this show there are outbreak bumpers, which I think is a technical term for them, where you get these kind of composite photos. So sometimes they're circles, as you can see behind us there, or sometimes squares, which kind of show each kind of separate VT piece throughout the show. I've got a discussion point coming on that later, so stay tuned.
Wow, what an absolute teaser.
That is a tease.
Now are we off to Riverside?
Now we're off to Riverside.
Right.
Now, we've fallen foul in the past of claiming places to be real when they're actually fictional, like a Lovell Stanton Spider Museum.
That was Nick that did that, wasn't it?
So I'm going to stick my neck out on the line here and say that Riverside Leisure Centre is a real place in Norwich.
Big news.
I looked it up on Google. It has an okay 3.2 out of 5 star rating from 78 reviews.
Solid.
And, do you think it's a controversial roof?
Swooped roof? I think that is quite controversial, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm shocked. Shocked to the core.
I had a little look through the reviews just to see if there are any kind of Alan-esque reviews left on there, and I did find one. I'm going to read one out for you now. I might just try and do a little Alan voice as well, see how that goes. Signage next to the pool asking for swimmers to shower before entering the water. However, I have seen numerous swimmers enter the pool without showering. The result? An odour on the water of perfume/body odour. There is no enforcement action by the poolside/lifeguards. Why not? Signage alone is not enough. This is a health and safety issue. 2 stars.
Wow.
Seems fair. I'm with him.
That's strongly worded.
Yeah. Excellent.
He mentions on arriving at Riverside Leisure Centre that his parking space used to be for disabled people, but after lengthy discussions he got them to rub out the wheelchair. That's similar to the beef he has in Mid Morning Matters Series 1 about there being too many disabled spots at a popular tourist location.
He hates disabled people, doesn't he?
He's got a real problem. And also, he's got much far less ground for argument, because you can see from the footage that there are only 3 disabled spots in the first place. Yeah. So.
He says he has a diet rich in tracker bars and Olivio, which allows him to lead the healthy lifestyle that is not normally available to people of his age. Question, is that a particularly healthy diet?
I was going to say, it's
questionable, I think.
I'd say he's picked 2 products that the obvious joke is they're not very healthy, but also I feel like Olivio and tracker bars are things of like yesteryear. No one eats them.
And also it's kind of like things that are marketed as being healthy products, but aren't necessarily.
They're certainly in decline, aren't they?
That's exactly it, isn't it? He's bought into the marketing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Should we discuss Alan's swimming styles?
Yes.
So he says in the show that He likes to do breaststroke if he's in a good mood, or butterfly if angry, or if I'm angry, or if I've let myself down at a social function. So I thought it's a safe bet that butterfly happens most
quite
often.
A lot. Yeah. He also gives us some stats about children and toileting in the pool. I don't know where he gets this information from, but apparently 4 in 30 will piss in the pool, and 1 in 100 will go further.
I love that, because he implies that the children are doing it, and they'll be like, you know, it's a conscious adult decision that so, question to the group: has anyone else had a particularly bad swimming pool experience, or any evidence of these problems that Alan's talking about?
Nothing specific. Maybe people not showering.
Yeah.
This is a lonely question.
I'll dive straight in. Okay. Mine's probably a tie between. When a kid pooed in the pool in Newton Abbot, and in the act of trying to catch it in a net, they broke it into several pieces that then began to corner people. All the time that I got out of a pool in Bristol and had to dodge various puddles of changing room blood, like I was in a budget version of Nightmare.
Wow!
Yeah, true stories.
When do you...
I won't name the pool because I don't want it closed down.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they need to be closed down, quite frankly. Yeah.
There's a lovely transition cut coming up where he tries to remember the last time he had a Veruca, and then he then has to stress, my watch is waterproof.
And swims away. I think that's one of our favourite little quotes.
Yeah. And it is delivered in that kind of classic travelogue style, which, because this show is aping, you know, it's the whole thing about Welcome to the Place of My Life, he's aping kind of a travelogue show. It's a mixture of travelogue, a personal journey documentary, and even a history programme of places. So that kind of, my watch is waterproof, and then just turning away from the camera and, like, swimming off.
And he's made sure the watch is, we can see it on the screen behind us, he's made sure the watch is so prominent throughout this whole thing, I wondered if maybe he's sponsored.
I was going to say, there's a product placement comment that he makes towards the end of the show, whereas this feels like it is him actually actively endorsing a product in an attempt to get waterproof.
So at this point he interviews Annabelle Swanson, does he not?
He does.
The only note I had before that was that he does stress that the pool is open to literally anyone, from thin bank managers to plump housewives.
He kind of appears confused by the concept of the leisure centre, that what, literally anyone can come here.
That it's open to the public.
It isn't a stopgap for you to use while your private gym's being refurbished.
Well, he does hate the general public, though.
True.
It does make sense.
So, Annabelle Swanson.
Yep, who's a hydrotherapist, or as Alan corrects her, water doctor. Carry on.
he asks if she could swim a length underwater, which she kind of confidently says, well, yeah, to which Alan's like, well, yeah, I could do it too.
Do we believe him?
Based on the evidence coming up, he struggles to tread water for about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Very obvious question to the group coming up. Can you swim a length underwater?
Probably not.
Not at this advanced stage. Yeah.
Basically, only the first length when you go for a swim. After that,
find me a time travel gymnasium.
Alan jokes that it should be a swan swim. Did you notice that the caption for her name comes up as Annabelle Swim Swam?
So the joke here obviously is that he's visibly struggling by the end of asking her the second question, accidentally spits at her, gets angry when she repeats herself and isn't brief enough because he is struggling to stay afloat.
Yeah, I made a note that him struggling to stay afloat drilling water, if everything we're seeing isn't real time at this point, he lasts about a minute before he's struggling.
I think I can manage a bit more than a minute.
And so he then replaces him asking her the questions as he's basically drowning with pre-recorded stuff that he's done later. Which is a joke that's repeated in Citadel, which we covered at Comic-Con in Manchester, where he's basically...
Yeah, so when he meets the mayor, I did like, because obviously the edits are so bad that you can hear his voice in both parts of the footage, so you can hear him spluttering whilst he's like saying, yeah, I'm absolutely fine.
And there's a great bit as well where he obviously asks her to name some famous patients. Edits in a shot of him saying, oh, I've never asked
you. But in the background, you can hear him say, who? And also, where's the side?
Anything else at the pool?
In Nomad, there was obviously quite a lengthy bit about him swimming there as well. But yeah, I mean, like we kind of said, I think it's fair to assume he's not the best swimmer. He definitely thinks he's better at it than he is in reality.
One thing I liked after this, going back to the ad break bumpers, is that there's a sort of mangle of conversational voices all speaking at the same time. And the only phrase I can pick out are, you go careful there, my love, and prostitutes.
Yes, that's it. So yeah, after this section, there's the ad break bumper, which is with the squares. So you've got top line, he's at the cemetery, he's doing a test drive, he's at the pool. The middle line, he's at the market, he's at the corner shop, he's at City Hall. The bottom line, he's in Thetford Forest, You've got Sitting All Again, and then he's dancing with a woman in what I would say is Afro-Caribbean dress. So as you can see in that corner there.
That doesn't make it to the final end.
That does not feature in the show at all. Ooh, and I don't know if you guys remember, that also features on the credit sequences of Scissor Isle.
Oh, I knew I'd seen it somewhere before.
Yeah.
So eagle eye.
Yeah, so I thought it's quite a good little running gag, because I thought maybe that footage is partly the joke is that they're kind of mocking those kind of documentaries where you've got stereotypical reportage of kind of like integrating with like the community, and then also the fact that it's a double gag that it's basically random footage of Alan that hasn't been used now in two separate documentaries that are 3 years apart.
Excellent, yeah. Lovely. Yeah,
so there's no one on earth with a little partridge Easter egg there, maybe.
Yeah, nice. I think so, for the eagle eye amongst us.
So with you.
Yeah, me.
So we must move on. His next place of his life is at City Hall,
where they dole out cash to the needy and the greedy.
And if you like power, you'll love Norwich City Hall.
The caption tells us it's in Norfolk as well, which is, of course, completely obvious.
Yeah. Norwich City Hall, only 1.7 stars out of 5 on Google from 74 reviews. Although, on further inspection, I was hoping for actual reviews about the hall itself. No, it's just people slagging off the council.
Okay, so it's the council that are being
there. Yeah, so I'm not having any of those.
That's democracy.
Budget cuts, they're doing it's hard enough job as it is.
Yeah. Go on.
I was going to say not to make it political, which that obviously would, although Alan does make it political by comparing the current Labour administration in the council to the stammering incompetence of King George, who was made famous in the film The King's Speech.
Another good example. Oh, God.
The crippling inability to make sense. Yeah. My favourite.
Another good example of what I like to call Alan yes, Coogan no, where Alan's opinions are literally the opposite of Steve Coogan's likely opinion.
Yeah, Alan's very anti-Labour Tory, which is the opposite of Coogan. Yeah,
there's another good one coming up a bit later.
I checked as well, and much like a day at the allotment, Norwich City Council is mostly Labour with a smattering of Greens and one Liberal Democrat.
Sorry, Theresa, it's a no.
He talks then about the Lord Mayor and says, it may surprise you to believe that he is a woman.
Yeah.
Again, trying to be progressive, but only getting about halfway there, isn't he?
And he talks about a fair crack of the whip, but then says, not literally, there are three dominatrixes working in the local area, which I think is a fair assumption. He has used them as such. To be so knowledgeable.
I did a very brief search of Norfolk dominatrix.
Same.
Of course you did.
Yeah. It was
research.
Guys, it was research.
What did you find? Are there three?
I bet there's a lot more than three.
Yeah. And what Google describes as a top result, I would not describe as a top result.
He then tries to squeeze some drama out of a motion to extend city centre parking fees past 7 p.m.
This is one of my favourite bits.
As we see in I'm Alan Partridge with the pedestrianisation of Norwich city centre, he's staunchly against any measure that inconveniences drivers, isn't he?
Yeah, so this was about, there was in March 2006 proposals to extend city centre parking fees to beyond 7 p.m. So I thought this was really brilliantly done, this whole sequence. Yeah. It's basically Alan's attempt to emulate a history show like David Starkey's Monarchy, or kind of like mocking the presenting styles of Dan and Peter Snow. Yep. So it's basically doing an in-situ to camera piece with a script adding as much drama as possible, but to what is in reality a very dull situation. It's about a very mundane council dispute, but he's marching through the corridors like it's war.
Gentlemen, do we have a deal?
Norwich awoke the next morning to peace.
Yeah. I did love as well with that bit, but it's when he's on the bench kind of saying about Norwich awaking that morning and it fades to a blur, then Alan stands up from the bench here and goes, is that alright? just a pear tree thing. Yeah. You edit there. Don't keep that
in. Remember who the director is, though.
He then claims Hitler had planned to make his victory speech from Norwich City Hall, and I did find two news sites that also claimed this, but they were both posted just a few months before this was broadcast, which is a bit suspicious.
Yeah, but it does seem, from rudimentary internet research, it does seem to be a widely held rumour that he planned to make a victory speech there, but I don't think there's hard evidence for it.
Okay.
But I did find a 2005 article from The Telegraph suggesting that Hitler's plan to make a town called Bridgnorth his base. So it's a small market town in Shropshire, which is right in the middle of the UK, so equidistant to everywhere.
Right.
It's particularly about the victory speech with Norwich City Hall. And I did find Norwich City Hall has a stately 365-foot balcony, the longest in England, It also has an imposing clock tower. The clock tower houses Great George, the largest clock bell in the UK, which also has the deepest tone in East Anglia.
You're the largest clock bell in the UK.
He goes on to say, the more I learn about Hitler, the more I dislike him. He was mad. It's quite an overused joke, yeah. I think, in Alan, basically underplaying the absolute evil of a character.
Did you think that, say, as Alan's looking out over the market and they play in the audio of a Hitler speech, do you think they kind of like crash through the taste barrier here? It's just like, it just felt a bit... quite wrong, really. I don't think you'd have seen that in a real
I didn't quite see how they were really wringing much comedy out of that bit. It was a bit
strange. It feels a bit awkward, doesn't it? But what I did like, though...
giving the Nazi salute?
Well, just before that, when he's talking about Hitler being mad and he's walking down the set, he actually slightly slips.
I did see that.
But you did see it.
I saw that bit, yeah.
So he's still outside City Hall and now he's talking about the lions around.
So what's he saying? He's petitioned
the council to change the Nazi lines to give him a thumbs up.
Yes. That's what we need
Double thumbs up.
So next up, he's moving on to Norwich Market, but I noticed on the infographic his next stopping point in Norwich Market is only 50 yards away. But the infographic does imply that he still drove. So we're at Norwich Market where he now has to interact with people because apparently they can't close the market just for him.
But before they even start that, they do a quick recap, so they literally recap what we've seen seconds before. It's 50 yards away, it's 2 seconds previous. They recapped him in front of the dogs, repeating a shot of him in front of them. Brilliant.
And he says he compares the Norwich Market of yesteryear to today, saying where once there were bear suits and quivers, just substitute that for monkey hats and tats. and then he talks about 1349 when the plague came to the market, and he compares plague to HIV and basically tries to explain it as flying AIDS, then immediately turns to a butcher behind him and goes, 2 handfuls of sausage meat, please.
That's not a measurement.
2 handfuls.
Also, a member of public does get in the way of the camera shot here. Look on his face, you know, he's absolutely fuming.
But don't redo it, just walk around and carry on.
Yeah. Does anyone have any notes about Alan Smurf?
Well, then it's stuffed with used bandages and had a sock for a hat.
He claims he once found a Smurf, they're full of used bandages and a sock for a hat. I wonder if that is the toy referenced in other Partridge, where there's another bit of
bandages.
Yeah, the toy
Used bandages.
And it comes up again with tampons as well. It's a familiar joke.
And then on camera, he then checks everything he picks up.
I really enjoyed this. He's inspecting the goods, so he looks at vacuum cleaner hoses, a stuffed toy dog, a ball of wool, and he's got no idea what he's looking for. He's like, I'm just going to
inspect these. Yeah.
Why?
Jumping around a little bit, but doesn't he also suggest that HIV is transmitted by heavy kissing?
Yes, he does.
Just checking.
He also goes on to scoff all the free samples.
And let's talk about the free samples.
Well, if you, as Alan says, if you hold your nerve, you can eat the equivalent of a 3-course meal.
And there's FA they can do to stop you.
I'm somewhere near where I work. I employ the same strategy as Alan. I will go with
is that Whole Foods, Tom?
Yes, and somewhere else.
The freebies are available.
You can work your way up the counter, have a little peruse, and then work your way back down again.
So he has a crack at trying to sell fruit and veg. Again, kind of something that's mirrored later in Scissor Dial when he's working behind the checkout in Tesco.
Yes, I thought this is a very, very similar piece to that, isn't it? Yeah.
He's having a laugh about whether or not he can do it and says, of course I can, it's menial work.
Yeah.
It's quite hard.
The local traders don't seem as convinced, but Alan is keen to stress in a VO that he found it very, very easy.
I did like the VOs in this part, because I think maybe earlier in the sequence there's a bit of kind of cheesy panpipe music underneath as well whilst he's walking through the market, really enforcing that attempt at a travel optics as well.
You can tell he gets kind of quite subtly, well, not that subtly, undercut by the people that work there as not being up to the job, but he knows he's going to get revenge in the edit. Things like, when I had a go at the thing he'd been doing for the last 25 years, it was one of the easiest things I'd ever done in my life. Although I did know that he also calls someone sugar tits while he's doing it.
Oh yeah, that's brilliant, because then he looks in the look on his face like he knows he's gone too far. If he's trying out something new, he's like, oh, that really didn't work very well.
He also used Alan's less fortunate voice when he says, I was particularly good at shifting bananas, some of which were manky.
So Mike, the trader, says to himself, be yourself, actually don't be yourself.
Yeah.
So that's great, because obviously they're all just taking this out of life. I thought, what's quite interesting about that would imply that he is a bit of a local celebrity. Like, people do actually know who he is and know what he's like.
He's infamous, but not known. Not good, famous.
Yeah, but I think he'll take that either way. Oh, people do actually know who he is.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Or they might have just been in his company for about 10 minutes and realised.
It could also be that.
Alan's biggest act of revenge against Mike, now that he's sort of turned against him, is in the edit where he basically slows down the footage to black and white documentary footage, starts implying that there's something wrong with
him. Like he's some kind of serial killer or something really weird like that.
Blames his inability to understand apostrophes and implies that he'd be selling knockoff Teletubbies stuffed with old tampons.
And did we say, he does literally say, go careful there now, one of exactly the same as in the Tesco bit.
Very much so.
Words,
So then he goes on to the news agents. They have a huge amount to contribute here. It's a very short scene.
It is, and not that great, I feel.
I think it's fine. I mean, all I was going to say is you obviously get the joke here about, you know, the difference between Alan and Steve. When he goes to buy a copy of a newspaper and the guy says, oh, you know, you get a free bottle of water with The Guardian. He says, yep, but you also get The Guardian.
That sounds very much like a joke he's learned from someone else.
And the news agents, Atif, it seemed like a bit of a one-way dialogue between Alan and Atif, but could this be a new Michael?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I think he's trying to find himself a Michael replacement.
Great theory.
Because you can see he's stood there kind of blabbering away, and Atif isn't listening. He's trying to find some kind of shop worker that he can hang out with during the day.
He's perching in his usual spot, like he would in the garage.
He's defaulted to the familiar.
Yes.
What he knows.
Yes. But Atif is not interested.
He also uses his chats with Atif as a sort of metaphor for national race relations.
Yes.
But then that loses its way when he claims the only issues are occasional overcharging for snacks and gum.
Yeah.
Also, he calls it Muslim Christian relations.
Yes, he does. He's around halfway through the show because he says, I'm halfway through my Norfolk Odyssey, but if you've just joined us, it'll still make sense.
Yeah.
Something he keeps stressing as we go on.
Again, that's a great kind of mocking of the TV trope of like the language of the TV recap, where again, like seeing the dogs repeated outside City Hall like 2 seconds later. It's like, basically, don't worry if you haven't tuned in from the start, don't turn off. We need those viewing figures.
So, shall we go for a test drive?
Yeah. One of two.
Quickly, in the ad bumper that preceded this, he was now pointing and arguing with the woman in the Afro Caribbean dress. If you follow this, there is a bit of a narrative that goes through.
This is the point that the premise of the show gets really stretched. He's supposed to be showing us the important places of his life, but apparently now that constitutes 6 different car dealerships, and I realise that what we're watching is basically televised errands, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just him doing what he wants to do, and if you're filming, so be it.
I mean, I think yes, but then also, like, genuinely, this is a big part of Alan's life, is just, like, driving cars, and, you know, obviously...
It's entertaining for him, not the audience.
Yeah, I think this probably is a point where he probably does this most days, so he doesn't have anything else to do.
Steve wants to test drive the new
We know Coogan's a big car fan.
Alan is driving at the beginning of the show. We see him driving a Vauxhall. I'm not convinced on Alan's North Norfolk Digital salary that he can even afford a Range Rover.
I will tell you as well, just because we like to check on the value of all of Alan's cars, that car he's driving at the start via We Buy Any Car has a value of £1,750 today.
My point has been proven.
There you go. It feels very Coogan, this bit, that he gets very irked by the driving instructor's superior knowledge of different Rovers. There's a lot of chat clash.
Yeah. I also noted that obviously a bit being places of my life, and then I think he mentions 20 car dealerships, so it's not even like there's one, it's just whatever one he can get a booking with, basically.
And this is classic Alan, really. Someone knows more about him on a subject and he doesn't like it and tries to kind of talk over him and just basically try and show that he knows more when in fact he knows next to nothing.
But by the end of the voiceover reveals he was very much in the wrong, or as Alan puts it, effectively we were both right.
The person taking the drive is Darren Grange. Did you look up who's
the person? Does anybody not know who that is?
I don't.
I recognise the face, but I don't know
why.
That is Neil Gibbons.
That's Neil Gibbons.
Ah!
What's interesting is that both Neil and Rob Gibbons appear in the show, but both are uncredited at the end.
Yeah.
It's on IMDb.
I didn't know that. Wow,
mind blown.
At least we're all learning something here today. I did have a general note that I didn't think this bit, this section was that great, but I think it's worthwhile because it contributes to a bit of a better gag later on, really. Because you get all the chat about the car details, and I thought they could have trimmed that down a bit, and it would still sound about
I think this bit kind of loses me a little bit, because it's the technical bits of Alan where he goes into detail about technology and stuff like that, but it's just not great and not that funny.
It's a bit like when he does all the DAB radio stuff in the book, isn't it?
It's not needed.
So you get the gag within 5 seconds. Yeah. You don't need
we understand you're a pedant. So let's move on, because we've got to keep to schedule. He's then off to the church. This again is kind of a weak section, I think.
Yeah, there's not a huge amount that happens. I mean, obviously it's St Michael's Church in Sheringham where a baby Alan Partridge was christened. A gentle form of waterboarding, but it's all part of God's rules.
Would it be controversial to say this is the weakest section of the program?
I think so, yeah.
I tend to agree.
I think it is for me, and it kind of reminded me of when he goes to the country manor in Scissored Isle. Very similar, where I just think you could cut the whole thing out and the show is still strong.
And it is quite dragged out, like when they're walking around the graveyard, it's slow and it's plodding and there's not a huge amount of jokes. I mean, personally...
That's the gag, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Slow, plodding.
I get that, but it takes a lot of time.
And then the joke is merely in the edit, the fact they make a really crappy jump cut edit just to make the vicar's chat quicker.
Because the vicar keeps stopping and like pondering what he's saying.
I was just going to say, I like the bit at the end where he's looking for his parents' grave and he proclaims that grave should be in alphabetical order.
There is some logic there.
That was reminding me, actually. We did have a tweet from months and months ago from, I think, Matthew Hillett. He said there's a continuity error here. So in the book, Alan says he can throw the flowers to his mother's grave from the car, whereas as you can see in Welcome to the Place of My Life, his mother's grave is nowhere near the road.
It's fine.
Yep. Very true.
He also describes someone's soul as a badly poached egg. So we now know that God is a gas and someone's soul is a badly poached egg.
I feel like he's
egg
applying...
and gas is combined. We've sat in recording studios with Jed enough to know that
he's applying a sort of campsite Jed brunch analogy to the whole of religion.
And a petrol forecourt petrol service station Scotch egg has given him gas.
It's all connected.
It's all coming together.
At one point the vicar says, yeah, graves are the keepers of stories untold, to which Alan says, great name for an album. And it is an album. I looked it up. Although I think it might have been made in tribute to this. It's made by an artist called Compuman Beings, and according to Discogs it was released on Kukutsu Records on July the 17th 2012, which does tie in with the broadcast day of this. It's a synth pop record featuring tracks such as Floating Mobile Phone Shop, Snooky, Pizza and Genocide, and finally Twin Towers. The artist also supposedly released a single of Gaudete featuring Alan Partridge and a 2013 track referencing the film The Room called Hi Mark. I listened to this album and I can confidently say that it was music.
Can I get it on Spotify?
No, I think it's Bandcamp only.
Okay, should we move on to Thetford Forest?
Yep.
Let's. Just one quick thing. In the car, when he's talking about the word great, his two examples of how widespread it's become are very good. He says, we use it to describe anything from a bowl of Frosties to the town of Yarmouth, and then goes on to give examples of proper old uses for it and gives Great Yarmouth as an example again.
Off to Thetford Forest then, which for some people means dogging or suicide. So I put Thetford Forest and dogging, and then Thetford Forest and suicide into Google. Sadly, the suicide article that was off Google, I'm not going to read out. The dogging one was quite good though. The article was why you should never blow a tyre in Norfolk's Premier.
The New Statesman article. I also read. I also found. Oh, sorry. Is there any more?
About
dogging.
I don't have anything about dogging.
I'm happy to jump to dogging expert Adam Brooks.
I don't think your notes just on dogging.
I was just going to say,
keep it short, Adam. We know this is a specialist area.
There's the New
Statesman. The New subject is dogging.
The New Statesman article is one thing, but then Cambridge News goes further, saying in 2007, a police survey of the town reportedly found that many people felt the area was not safe to visit because of the activities there. But it's in the comments section where the doggers fight back with Dog's Breath 48 saying you could buy the masks from Poundland and draw what you like on them. I am a bulldog. That comment had 3 thumbs up and 2 thumbs down, which I think shows that this issue is really dividing the community. Further comments from Dogging Direct. Further comments from Dogging Direct, Lloyd with 1L and Avon a Laugh 2 did not add anything significant to the debate, so I won't go into further detail.
Oh, something to look up in your own time.
Yeah.
I quite like the bit when he's describing Norfolk Countryside as being the great outdoors. He says, "I'm every bit as serious as a Pride of Britain Awards," which I thought was a nice yep. tie together of, you know, Alan, he's Daily Mail, he's The Sun, he's ITV, he's Brexit, he's the Pride of Britain Awards. I thought that just captures the character quite nicely. He also mentions that his working day is over by 2 p.m. which is no one that he wants to find in Newmarket.
Presumably he does start early because he's doing the early morning shift.
But it's not early morning, it's mid-morning, if anything.
Yeah, I'm going to retract that completely.
Did you know the infographic for this section? The car is stuck behind a bus belching out diesel because he hates public transport.
Yeah, so good.
There's also a comment on Alan, from Alan that he loves trees. We know this from I Partridge. There's obviously the bit where he keeps going back to the tree. And also, Tom, you read the autobiography. There's a section where he talks about every New Year's Eve, is it, that he goes back to a certain tree?
Yeah, in real life, to do that. Well, that's quite nice.
As he says, a tree doesn't judge, it doesn't criticise your clothes or bring up poor viewing things.
So he's now in the field where he comes up with his best ideas, and he goes on to talk about and propose a league table of lollipop ladies. His problem with lollipop ladies being anyone that's not a registered sex offender can become one. I don't know.
Which
you
genuinely can't believe.
He's
stunned by that.
He goes on, "We're handing over the power to people that are little more than retired dinner ladies. It has to improve or stop." So, would you like some lollipop lady facts?
Yes, yes, please.
How many?
First of all, talking about the powers. So it seems that
powers.
Alan's words are not mine. So it seems that in the year 2000 it was no longer compulsory for schools to have lollipop ladies. But they also basically, under UK law, they changed it so it was an offence for a motorist not to stop a signal to do so by a lollipop lady. In the past they only had the authority to stop the traffic for children, so in 2000 they were no longer compulsory, but they had more power. They are officially known as school crossing patrol officers. Doing some rudimentary maths, which is possibly wrong, there are around 6,000 in the UK. They earn very little, usually between £7.50 to £9 an hour. And the longest serving lollipop lady in the UK was Margaret Cattle, and she served for 45 years.
Nature's hero.
Yeah. Going on? Margaret Cattle, beat yourself.
So he's off to the ski slope now. Yeah. I was quite surprised that he skied. That seems quite cool for us.
I was going to say, well, I think Coogan may ski. Yes.
Oh, okay.
just showing off.
Yeah. Also, noticed by this point, there's now no longer graphics showing him travelling from one place to another. That's been
bad. Although the previous album we had before we got this section, he was hugging the woman
Next up is a slightly weird scene where he's eating some kind of like derelict cheesy dunker with an elderly lady and a young boy.
Yeah, the young child who doesn't even talk to him, and the woman who's there but she doesn't ski. So he just walks off.
And I think he started that segment by trying to claim that these were the kind of people that his friends that he sees all the time, and it becomes apparent that not only do they not ski, but he's never met
them. Yeah, he says it's about people. It's always about the people. But he's clearly going there on his own.
There's not much more at the ski slope, is there? He's back for North Norfolk Digital. Yeah. I think this is the point that the show very much starts to unravel, rather than being a very precise, well-captioned, well-paced travel around the places of his life. He's been to one of six car dealerships, and sort of everything's fallen apart. The infographics have stopped, and now he's received some worrying news from the NHS. We learn.
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting because you get this hint because he gets some kind of like test result letter or a letter saying that he needs to go into the hospital. So it does start kind of introducing a weird element of pathos to it as well, as this continues a bit, because you just don't really know what's going to happen.
It's quite a smart way of introducing a bit of narrative into a documentary that's controlled by Alan, because there are things you just couldn't do because he obviously has control over the final edit, but they've snuck in just enough information that you can tell something's going on that he's not.
And also the thing
about.
Is, if this was a real documentary, none of this stuff would actually make it to the show. That's the point.
Also, at the point that he's talking to Alex Bennion, the producer of Norfolk Digital,
and that is Rob Gibbons.
That's
Rob
Gibbons. Oh, I see. Yeah. You notice that the captions turning up are just turning up as people walk in and out of the room now. It's not like a planned interview of any kind.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Like I say, the structure keeps breaking down. He then goes off back on the test drive and he spots an old teacher.
Yeah.
Runs off to try and talk to them. I think he's basically evaluating his whole life at this point, isn't he? Because he's had news from the NHS.
Sure. I think you can kind of make out, so obviously you can't hear what you're saying to the teacher, but I think you can kind of work out the conversation is something along the lines of, remember me, you used to teach me when I was that small, yeah. You can see him gesturing, used to hit me, and then it's basically like, screw you, F
yeah,
you,
that's what
and, then, and then kind of like, and look at me now, yeah. Kind of sign up as well.
Yeah.
And then when he gets back in the car, he just goes, real cunt. Actually quite shocking the use of language there.
Yeah.
Alan himself is looking quite upset by the whole encounter.
What I quite like is that he's looking quite upset, he's breathing quite heavily, and then slowly the big mobility scooter drives past. Actually, that teacher has not bothered by that conversation.
No, it was just carried completely unfazed.
There's a lovely cameo from Lynn on the other end of a phone.
Yes.
as he
goes to the second test drive.
Yeah, yes. That's right. There's a wonderful bit where basically he and the driving the test drive guy is both on the phone having sort of comedic exchanges with their boss.
Yeah.
That must have been a nightmare to get right, because you can't have both of them.
It's so good though, it's kind of worth watching a couple of times to get all the detail. I also enjoyed that when Lynn phones, he answers, says quickly Lynn, then he holds the phone away to ask about driving another car.
Also enjoyed when the car dealer's attempts to explain who Alan is and why he's famous to his boss, because Alan's trying to get permission to take the car off.
Yeah, he has to repeat his name three times, explain his presenter and all the digital, and he said, not telly, it's radio.
At this point, they're cutting all over the place. He's back at Thetford Forest very briefly, then he's at a private hospital in Norwich where he says he's being seen by top medical specialists, some of whom are British. So I presume he's getting his NHS issue checked out.
Yeah,
whatever that might be.
Yeah, well, there's a spring in his step when he comes back. So.
I mean, he's
had the all clear.
He's running, he's grinning, he's bought chocolate ices for everyone. So yeah, whatever happened, it was good news. I was also just to skip up very quickly, just when he's talking about the people that
have wronged him.
So he names
Andrew Marr.
He names Anne Robinson, Andrew Marr, the Dimbleby brothers, and various builders. Clearly, the builders from My Man and Partridge series.
I was quite surprised
Tony Hayes didn't make it onto that list.
Oh, yeah.
And so then we're onto the final scene in Petersfield, a montage of him off-roading through puddles while Chumbawamba plays. We discovered that he takes liberties like this with test drive cars all the time. It's a similar scam to the taking all the free samples at Norwich Market one that he taught us earlier.
Can I give you some tough-thumping facts by Chumbawamba? Yes. Yes. Section.
Quick fire facts.
Yep. Released in 1997, the band's most successful song charted at number 2 in the UK, number 6 in the US. It's on the charts in Australia, Canada, Ireland, Italy and New Zealand, and as of April 2017 it sold 880,000 copies in the UK.
Sweet Lord.
It was number 2 in the UK chart for three weeks and was held off the number 1 spot by Will Smith, Men in Black, which I bought on CD single, so I contributed to Chumbawamba not getting to number 1.
Congratulations.
There's a million streams on Spotify. There we go, Chumbawamba facts done.
There's a lovely bit of physical comedy as we've enjoyed in other Alan projects where, like his slide out of the chair in Mid-Morning Matters as he falls asleep and lurches over onto the car dealer.
Yeah,
it's also reminds me of the way kids fall asleep in the car after a fun day out.
Yeah, and I think actually when he's at Thetford Forest the first time and you see like at the end of that sequence he just like runs off away from the camera and he's like, he just kind of forgets he's making a TV show and he is acting like a big kid, which I thought was quite nice.
Yeah.
Also, just about bombing around Petersfield, I thought of course Alan's only doing the bombing around in test drive cars, not his own cars.
Yes, of course. And I like the bit where he kind of screeches up, looks to the camera, he's about to say
something. I think he's going to say something.
So it's almost time to wrap up, but we should talk a little bit about what we like, what we don't like about this, and where it ranks in the Partridge universe. Yeah. I mean, There are some issues for me, I think, but there are some good things. There are lots of jokes that work on two or three levels, so things that I kind of had to rewatch and got something new from each time. I wouldn't like a few more recurring characters from Alan's past. I do think these rely too heavily just on him.
But then I like the way that they layered it in by having someone like Lynn just being on the phone, so she's still part of his life.
Yeah.
And the Lynn-based gags are very good if you hear what he's saying to her on the phone.
Very true.
She doesn't need to feel that. Yeah. It's not a freelancer, Lynn. Yeah, I love that.
I personally haven't seen it for quite a long time. It's not that easy to find, although finding we did. But personally, I enjoyed it. I got quite a lot out of watching it. I think it certainly bears repeat viewing.
I mean, I think personally, I'd put it up on a par with Scissor Dial. I think those two sit very well together. I mean, they're similar kind of style.
Companion piece.
But yeah,
it was critically very well received.
Yeah. I mean, I think Scissor might have been, I mean, obviously Scissor won a BAFTA, didn't they?
Yeah.
So I guess that's maybe fair a bit better.
Although, according to Wikipedia, Steve Coogan won a BAFTA for his performance in this.
Oh, I haven't done my research.
Yeah. There we go.
But yeah, I did think it's one of those things where each vignette kind of works in its own right. So it's almost like they could all be strong eight Alan sketches. So that kind of thing, where, again, same thing with Scissor. You can pull any of these sequences out solo and they're still really strong, I think.
And you've got the added bonus of obviously the whole thing is superb. The construct of this show is that it's a documentary produced by Alan, so there's extra comedy in the cuts, in the captions, in the way
the production of the show itself is one big joke.
The way the whole documentary loses its way about two thirds of the way through, and they just abandon the format entirely.
I just think it's kind of, it just gives it layers, because it's not just about the characters, it's about the scenarios and about the type of program they're trying to make and kind of failing at doing as well.
Can I potentially be the one damning voice here?
Sure.
I think it falls massively off a cliff after the Norwich Market bit. I think the rest of it after that, I think it's pretty weak. There's not many laughs. I mean, I think it's below Scissor Dial. I think it's one of the weakest Partridge Falls that they've done, I think.
Wow.
I think there are some really good, strong standout lists, but they're all in the first third. The rest of it, I think, is...
It definitely tails off towards
the end. I think there are definitely a couple of sequences that they could lose, but...
I thought it was, having watched it originally, I then rewatched it for this, and I thought it was going to be better than it was, and I was like, actually, I think Scissor Dial is better, and I think there's better stuff.
Okay.
So you can't, definitely.
A damning voice indeed.
Sorry.
Okay, well, that pretty much brings us to the end. We should just mention that we are taking Monkey Tennis on tour, the Mid-Evening Matters tour, calls at Bristol on the 7th of September, Manchester on the 8th, and King's Place here in London on the 9th of September, and there are tickets available at monkeytennispod.com. Sales plug over.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of the episode. Thanks very much for joining us, and thanks for listening to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Monkey Tennis? This is great banter.
Hot, 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 hot.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E? Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest. Monkey Tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey Tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes. It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey Tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.